we started talking about thermodynamics in expanding universe. And so the key point there is that once you find the distribution function, which is this function fi, which in general depends on time, x and p, then you can calculate important physical quantities like the particle density, particle number density, the energy density, all the pressure from these formulas. So now, to find this distribution function is not an easy task in general, especially if you are not in equilibrium. And this is the case with the early universe, that it's almost equilibrium, but actually when you most need it, it is not in equilibrium. So in those cases, you really have to find this F from kinetic equations. And so one example of and the most used example of kinetic equation is the Boltzmann equation. And so you need to solve that Boltzmann equation to find this function F. However, if you are close to the equilibrium, namely if the universe expands slowly when compared to how many collisions of particles you have, then you have local equilibrium. So if there is enough collisions so that actually particles have all the time to exchange all the information before the universe significantly expands, then I have local equilibrium, I have the maximum entropy possible, and from the principle of maximizing the entropy, I can find that the distribution function is this one here. It's either Bose or Fermi-Dirac distribution, Bose-Einstein or Fermi-Dirac distribution. So here, of course, E is the energy of the particle, mu is the chemical potential, T is the temperature, and then you get plus or minus one, depending on whether you have fermions or bosons. So now I will use this to actually write these expressions more explicitly now. Okay, so these expressions are general for any F. So now we have this particular F, so let's find what these things are. Okay, so first of all, we have the energy, and we take the energy to be that of the relativistic particle. So in general, again, there will be different particles. So we have this index I, and of course the formula that is equal to p squared plus mi squared. So you see the first simplification here is that the energy does not depend on x. In this case, it depends only on p. So second simplification is that in our case, really, fi is not function of t, x, and p, but rather it's function of e only, right? Or, yeah. So fi is function of e only, which means that from this equation, it's function of p only, of the magnitude of the momentum. So of this thing here, right? So what it means is that we can actually partially integrate these integrals. Everything is homogeneous and isotropic, basically. So we can partly integrate . So namely, if I'm writing the measure d3 of p, well, then I switch to the spherical coordinates. So I have d omega for the angles, and then the magnitude p squared, and then dp. Okay, so now the angles are boring. They just give you 4 pi. And this I can turn it to the integration over the energy. Okay, so I will just do that. So that means that p squared equals to e squared minus m squared, which means that if I have dp, so 2 times p dp is 2e dE. Okay, from which I have that dp is EDE over P, but for P, I again plug this thing here. So in the end, I have that D3 of P equals to D omega, and now it's E squared minus m square, square root of that, e and dE. Okay, so now I use it, and so let me demonstrate everything today just on the particle density, and then it will be your task to for the other two. Yes?
In d to the 3p equals d omega, is p square there?
Yeah. P square here.
It's p square.
Yeah. It's just the standard spherical coordinates.
Okay.
It's like r square, the r. Yeah. Okay. So for example, let me do it on this ni, t of x. Okay, so the integration over the angles gives you 4 pi. So now we have 1 over 2 pi cube there. So, okay, 4 pi, so it's 1 over 2 pi square. If I combine all the pi's and integrate over the angles. So now we change the variables from p to e. However, p can take any values, but e is always bigger than m, right? If you do that change of coordinates, so the integral is now from mi to infinity instead of 0 to infinity. And then we have that factor there, which we calculated. So it's e squared minus mi squared. And e and dE. And then, of course, we have the Boltzmann the equilibrium distribution, which is e to e minus mu I over t, and then plus minus 1. Okay. So now we have only one integral to do. And of course, you can do the same thing for RI and for PI. And that will be your homework, but it's very similar. So it will be done with that homework very quickly. Well, not really, because there are many other tasks. By the way, if you looked at the wiki yesterday, then I posted the homework, but I expanded it since then. So at the end of the lecture, I will give you the latest version, which has a little bit more problems. Okay. So anyway, so this integral actually is hard to do in general. And so people consider just two cases which are of physical interest. So first, people consider really relativistic particles, and then non-relativistic limit, all these things. Okay, so let's take a look at this thing. First, let's say in the relativistic limit. And it's interesting that actually doing the integral in the relativistic cases is simpler. And I will tell you later on why is that, but it's sort of obvious. So relativistic limit will happen when the temperature is really, really huge when compared to the rest mass and the chemical potential. So mi or mu I. So if you have really, really hot plasma, then all the particles have lots of kinetic energy. They move like crazy. And you can neglect basically mass and the chemical potential. Okay, so in this case, and I, it's 1 over 2 pi square. And then I'll be neglecting mi, so this will be really 0. So I'll be integrating from 0 to infinity. I neglect this mi there, and I neglect this mu there. Okay, so we have that it's an integral from 0 to infinity. Now this becomes e square dE, and then you have e to e over t, and then plus minus 1. So far, everybody's happy. Okay, so now, of course, you are integrating over dimension full quantity e. It's always, it's a part of good education to change to something which is dimensionless, right? So you integrate over something dimensionless. So you introduce a new quantity x, which will be e over t. In other words, dE is t dx. And if you do that, then you have 1 over 2 pi square. And then from each e in the denominator, I have t. So that will be t cube coming from these guys. So it's t cube. And then it's an integral from 0 to infinity, x squared dx, e to the x, plus minus 1. OK, so now, of course, basically everything we wanted to extract is already extracted. This is just some number. So we know that the particle density actually behaves like t to the cube in the relativistic case. But this number actually, so for bosons, this is equal to, now we have two cases. So it's 2. And now I don't know how to write this. It's zeta function 3. And it's 3/2 of zeta function of 3. OK, this is just some number. Okay. So in other words, we derive that, and let me just omit that index I at this point. OK, and this is equal to, this is for bosons, and this is for fermions. So whether plus or minus, I get two different results, two different numbers. So now we have the result that for bosons and okay, so for bosons, we have theta 3, t to the cube, and then pi square. And then for fermions, we have that this is equal to 3 over 4 of bosons. OK, so now you can do the same thing for the energy density and for the pressure. And this will be your homework, but I'm so nice that I will give you the result. OK. So if you do it for the energy density, then for bosons, what you get is b squared over 30, now t to the 4. And for fermions, you get the same thing up to a factor 7 over 8. The numbers which stand in front of these things are not really that important. Well, if you are doing concrete calculation, they are, and they a little bit matter. But what really matters is that the particle density goes like t to the cube, and that the energy density goes like t to the fourth. So how would pressure go? Anybody? Remember, sorry, what did you say? Nothing. So it definitely goes like t to something. And so you know you have relativistic particles here, right? So you know that they have, that usually, well, at least from best approximations, you have that the pressure is equal to rho over 3, right, for that. So it must go as t to the 4 as rho does, right? So this goes as t to the 4. And in fact, actually, you can show that Vi, no matter whether you consider bosons or fermions, which is pi over rho I, it's always 1 over 3. So we can actually confirm this, and that gives you p. So I didn't give you p here, but this is always satisfying. Okay. So we have, this is really what is really important, is that this goes like t cube, this goes like t to the 4, and this goes like t to the 4. But of course, so we did some horrible calculation here. But you could have guessed these dependencies immediately based on dimensional analysis, right? So these can get from dimensional analysis. And so what we are really doing here is that we are setting all possible fundamental constants equal to 1, right? So we have h bar equal to c equals to kb equal to 1. So now if you set also g Newton equal to 1, then everything would be dimensionless and it wouldn't have dimensions at all. So now we are keeping g Newton so that everything has some dimensions. In particular, actually, it will be interesting dimensions are dimensions of length. So energy is 1 over length. So this is actually interesting. So if you are doing particle physics, people like to measure things in energies. If you are doing general relativity, people like to measure things in lengths. So it's always the dimensions are opposite. So anyway, so if this is true and we keep g Newton, then we have that 1 over length has the units of energy, has the units of temperature, and so on. So now the particle density, well, it's number of particles per volume. So volume goes like like length to cube, right? And length goes like 1 over t. So that's why n goes like t to the cube, right? And similarly, you can derive the other ones. Okay, so it's just from this dimensional analysis, you can immediately guess this thing, and then the calculation just gives you these prefactors in front of that. Questions? So that was the relativistic limit, and of course, this is true because the only energy the only limit which you have here is really the temperature. You neglect the mass and you neglect the chemical potential. So if you neglect those, then this is the only thing which has the units of energy. Okay? So now let me do the other limit, which is the non-relativistic limit. What I mean by that is that now temperature is much smaller than mi. And I will also simplify my life by saying that mu I is smaller than mi. But this doesn't have to be true always. But let's just do this definition of non-relativistic limit. So now, where is the? Now, if you look at this expression for n, very good, then there is an exponential of something. And if t is small, then that exponential, actually the exponent of this exponential is quite big. Right? So for that reason, in the non-relativistic case, in the classical case, you can neglect like this plus or minus 1 over there. Okay. So in this case, my ni will be approximately equal to 1 over 2 pi square, and then integral from mi to infinity, and then e square minus mi square, square root of that, e dE, and I just neglect this plus or minus 1, so it's e to e minus mu I over t, and that's it. Okay, so I'm neglecting plus or minus 1. So now I make a substitution. Again, I introduce a dimensionless quantity. And this time it will be E minus MI over T, and I will call it U, which means that E equals to UT plus MI. And so now you plug this E everywhere, UT plus MI. So from here, you see that there will be MI minus mu I over T, and that I can take outside of the integral. Okay. So this will be equal to e to mu I minus mi over t. I have still these 2 pi square there. So now, if the energy is equal to mi, then u is equal to 0. So now my integral becomes from 0 to infinity. From 0 to infinity. And then you have to plug it here and plug it there, and that's ugly. So let's write what it is. So this is u square t square plus 2 u t mi to the power of 1/2, which comes from here. And then from e is just this thing, so it's ut plus mi. And then dE is t du. Du, and then what remains in the bottom is just exponential of u. Okay, so far this is believable. So now I'll do something very, very sneaky, and that's what people do here. So if you look at this thing, so if u is small, if u is small, then this is approximately equal to 1, right? And then I can, so close, for u small, I can neglect this term, and I can neglect that term in the denominator. So if u is very, very small, then I can sort of make an expansion for small u in the denominator, and then, whatever I do with the denominator. Now, if u is big, right, so these terms would start to contribute, but then everything is suppressed by a huge e to the u, right? So I don't make much mistake. It's actually, if I just calculate the integral for small u, because for big u, the exponential in the bottom actually kills everything. Okay, so this is very, approximate thing. If you're interested in the full calculation, you can see Mukhanov, and he has like 5 pages of calculations. And of course, the leading order is the same. So let's just do this. So it's approximately equal to, and we are just keeping integrand to lowest order in u because of the exponential, this e to the u on the bottom. Okay, so then this is approximately equal to e to mu I minus mi over t 2 pi square. Okay, so if I neglect that guy, and if I neglect that guy, then it becomes t to 3/2, and then some other factors. So it becomes mi t, oh, very good, 2 pi to 3/2. Is it? Not really. Sorry. Two pi square is still here. Okay, and then I have mi t to 3/2. And there is still square root of 2 here. And then I take that integral, 0 to infinity. And what's remaining there is just the square root of this u. And then e to minus u. Okay. So this is what it is. So again, this guy is some number, which happens to be pi over 2. So in the end, the final expression is that mi approximately equals to mi t over 2 pi 3 halves e to mu I minus mi over t. And this is probably the result you know very well. So now if you do the same thing, again, it will be your homework, but it's once you do this integral, the other integrals are simple. So if you have rho I, then as I say, once you do ni, it's almost done. So rho I equals to mi times ni. Okay, it's just you multiply it by mass. And the pressure is just t times ni. Okay. So now you see that really, because I kept, basically, I have temperature, but I have also, well, which is units of energy, is the mass and the chemical potential in this case. I keep all three of them, so my final expressions, they depend on all three of them. In the first case, in the relativistic case, I said mi and mu I equal to zero, so everything depends only on temperature. Okay. So this is the result. But if you look at this thing here, let's forget about the chemical potential at this point. So it goes like exponential to minus mi over t. So what it means is that actually, you know, something bad happened to the thermodynamics in its childhood. And so thermodynamics since then really hate massive particles, right? So thermodynamics hates massive particles. So if you have small temperatures, really, you know, there's not so many particles which are massive. So what actually thermodynamics tries to do, that if you have a massive particle, it tries to kill it and produce something which is lighter and more relativistic. Okay, so that's why, you know, many particles annihilate as the temperature drops down. Okay. So that's one thing. Another thing is that now if you take this W I again, which is pi over rho I. So now, if you do it here, then you have t over mi. However, we are in limit where mi is much bigger than t. So this approximately equals to zero, which is precisely what I was saying, is that the galaxies actually, or whatever, you can treat them as dust, where they have zero, but the equation of state is such that W is equal to zero. Questions, comments? Okay, that was a fancy calculation. So now let's do something different. So now the universe, as it expands, what is interesting is that the energy is not conserved. But what is conserved is the entropy. Okay? So adiabatic expansion and again the same condition I told you, so if actually particles have enough time to exchange all the information, then the entropy is like maximized, it's conserved, and so on. So if you have any process, whatever, that process has some rate, and then in our approximation, just for the units, so it's given by the number of particles which are colliding, the number density of particles which are colliding, by the cross section, and by how fast, well, what is the relative speed of these particles? So this is again, thing. So this is the rate of the process. And so you will say that this process is adiabatic. Adiabatic. if the rate is much bigger than the expansion rate of the universe. Exactly the same condition as we had before. So if the time for the collisions is much shorter than th, so this is exactly the same thing. And we call that process adiabatic. Okay. So now it can be shown that if you have these adiabatic processes, that the entropy does not increase. There's no entropy increase which means that S equals to constant. So the entropy is an extensive quantity. So you can write it as small s times the volume. And then small s will be an intensive quantity. So this you define to be small s times the volume. So now, because big S is constant and volume goes like a to the cube, then small s must go like 1 over a to the cube. So small s is proportional to a to minus 3. Okay, so now let me derive what is small s actually is equal to. So we now know how to calculate rho, p, and m. So how is this related to small s? Okay, and I'll just do it for the relativistic case. So consider a bus of relativistic species. And then for simplicity, I will neglect all the chemical potentials, as we did over there. So neglect all mu's, the chemical potentials. What it means is that quantities which you calculated before, but everything depends only on temperature, as we saw before. So rho is function of temperature, pressure is function of temperature only, and small s will be function of temperature as well. And basically neglecting everything else, everything what has units of energy must be related to temperature. Okay, so now consider a general first law of thermodynamics. So dE equals to TdS minus PdE. And let's express everything in terms of intensive quantities. So again, I'll write that E is rho times V equals to T, now I have D, small s times big V, minus P dV. Okay. So now I know how to take D of V, it's just dV. And if I'm taking d of rho, it will be just d rho over dt and dt. Okay. And similarly here, I will have ds over dt and dt. And that's it. So in the end, I have only two independent things. I have dv and dt. So if I group the terms together and put everything which depends on dv on the left-hand side and everything which depends on dt on the right-hand side, then this is what I get. So I have rho plus p minus Ts, and this is proportional to dV. And then if I put on the right-hand side, which depends on dt, I have V T dS over dt minus d rho over dt dt. Okay, just do the math, it's one line. Okay, so this is our key equation. And now a miracle happens in cosmology. And that is that actually each side independently vanishes. Okay, so I'm claiming that this guy is zero. And of course, if that guy is 0, then this guy is 0 as well. Okay. So now there are like arguments, well, T and V are sort of independent. So I can always, you know, keep the temperature fixed and I can just change dV. But this must still be true, so that's why this must be 0, or that must be 0. I will show you explicitly how you can see it if you don't believe these arguments. Okay, so but anyway, so what we get from there is that if this guy is 0, then small s is equal to rho plus p over t. So if I know rho, if I know p, I can calculate what small s is. In particular, you know that rho is t to the 4, p is to t to the 4 over t. So s goes like a cube. S goes like t cube, which of course makes sense because big S is conserved. V goes like a cube, so small s must go like 1 over a cube. The only temperature, the energy is the temperature. So this thing actually goes like t to the cube, again from the dimensional analysis. And of course, if you are more careful, then what you find using those expressions which I derived there is that there is 2 pi square 45 t cube for the bosons. And then for the fermions is 7 over 8 of that. So you know how to calculate the entropy density. So now I left a little bit space here. So people usually put here G, and that G would actually stand. So you know that a particle can have more degrees of freedom. If you have an electron, whatever, or if you have, so it's like spin degrees of freedom, for example. So then you would put 2 for the electron. Yeah, but let's not be bothered by it. But the problem here is actually that if you put that, then let's say, and call it effective number of degrees of freedom of that particle, then this sort of actually depends on the temperature as well. So I'll show you that later on. But if I don't have this G, I just treat 1 degree of freedom of this particle at this point, then this is true. Okay. So this is beautiful. So S is equal to rho plus P over T. This is a very important relation. That's why you will derive it in a completely different way in your homework as well. Yes?
Why we only do it for theistic particles and not for
non-relativistic? I'll show you now. Okay. I'll show you now. Yeah, good question. So that's why I told you I don't like that this can be done independently to that. Because then you don't really use the fact that you are relativistic. So now I'll show you that I really need to be relativistic, sort of, to get that. So now let's prove that really. So prove that the right hand side vanishes. And thanks for that question. It's amazing. It exactly fits to what I need to do. So we know that we are relativistic. That means that rho is 3 times pressure. So we neglect all mu's. That means that S is proportional to a to minus 3. So S is proportional to 3. Because from the dimensional analysis, T goes like 1 over A. Okay. So finally, I don't want to go into fancy statistical physics. So again, I'm trying to keep everything here on the thermodynamic level. So for that, I'll use Maxwell relation. So Maxwell relation. Relation tells you, remember that magic square I showed you in classical mechanics course. So it tells you that dP over dT at constant entropy is equal to dS over dV at constant pressure. Okay, so now S, in our case, is small s times V, where small s is function of temperature only. Okay, so you can sort of believe me that this guy actually will be like small s. So from here, I'm not claiming this is waterproof, but almost waterproof. So small s, this is really small, small s equals 2. And now P depends only on temperature, so I can change it to normal differential. So it's equal to dP over dT. Okay. Okay. So now what we need to prove is that right hand side vanishes. So let's consider that combination. So we have T dS over dT, that's again small s, minus d rho over dt. So now I plug for rho is equal to 3p. So this is t ds over dt minus 3 dp over dt. Because I'm relativistic. Okay. So now I use that this guy is s, small s. So we have that d ds over dt minus 3s. But I also know that the dependence on s must be t cube. Whatever stands in front of that, and it must behave like t cube. So if you differentiate it with respect to t, you get 3 times t squared, right? And so this is 0. So indeed, that formula there is valid, but you need to be relativistic and you need to do other things. So now we will do something which is real fun, and that is basically when you can no longer, when you no longer have equilibrium. So what happens then? So decoupling and freeze out. So now what happens is that we had that condition so that everything here holds the condition that we are adiabatic, or that this gamma is much bigger than h. Right? So in that case, the entropy is conserved and we have equilibrium and everything works fine. However, the reaction rate over there depends on the temperature of the plasma which you have. Right? So as the temperature drops, the reaction rate of a given equilibrium reaction can be, drops as well. Okay? So as T drops, the reaction rate, gamma, which keeps the equilibrium, which was really the reaction which was keeping my particles in equilibrium, so keeping equilibrium, decreases. And so for gamma smaller than h, this is no longer true, right? So what happens is actually that there is not enough there is not enough reactions to keep equilibrium. So for example, if you have, I don't know, annihilation of two particles, so you need particle to meet antiparticle to produce gammas, right? And so if there is enough particles and antiparticles, this reaction goes both ways. You can create them from vacuum, you can annihilate them, creating gammas and so on. However, if you have only a few number of particles and antiparticles, let's say that they all annihilated or whatever, then it's very unlikely that the particle will find an antiparticle to annihilate with, right? And so in that case, actually, the reaction actually decreased. And this depends on the temperature. And in that case, the reaction decreases, and we have no longer equilibrium. But of course, if the particle doesn't meet the antiparticle, then it sort of survives, right? And so it decouples from the rest of the thing. So if for gamma I smaller than h, species I decouples, that means that it is no longer in thermal equilibrium. Equilibrium with the rest of the bars. Okay. So this is a little bit abstract. So let me give you two examples, concrete examples, how this affects your life. Okay. So example one, and that is cold dark matter. Example, cold dark matter. So let's say that dark matter is described by some unknown particle chi. Okay. So now, as long as chi is relativistic, everything is fine. When the temperature drops, so that chi is no longer relativistic. So let's assume that this chi is massive, so it has some m chi, some mass m. So then, if this thing is in equilibrium, you remember that factor for non-relativistic particles is e to the minus m over t. So thermodynamics hates these massive particles. Okay. So really the number of these chi's decreases. Okay. So below m chi, particles, so to each particle you have antiparticles, so let's say there's chi bar as well. So particles chi and chi bar are exponentially rare. So now suppose further that the only way how you can destroy chi, that to destroy chi is through the annihilation. So let's say that really this is the only way how you can get rid of that. Okay, so that's the assumption. So now as the rate drops below h. Okay, so this is the rate, how fast it goes. By the way, when this happens, it's exactly called freeze out. So this thing is called freeze out. So when gamma equals to h, we call that freeze out. So as the rate dropped below this, so this reaction, simply the particle will never find that antiparticle, right? So these reactions are very, very rare. And that means that the number of particles of chi and number of particles of chi bar will be conserved since then, okay? So below this, reaction no longer occurs. And that means that means that number of chi is conserved. And in other words, the number density goes like t to the cube. Or goes like, well, is it number which is conserved divided by volume? Okay, so now the picture, I'll draw a picture of what's happening in this case, right? So on this axis will be the number of these chi's over t to the cube. And on this picture, on this axis, there will be m chi over t. Okay, just draw a box. So let's say m equals to t here, and it's 10 times smaller here, and it's 100 times smaller here. Okay. So when m equals to approximately t, that's the time where the particle is no longer relativistic. Okay. So here, this is how the particle number is. Let's say it's equal to something. And so this area up to m equal to t is relativistic. Okay. Then if m, well, if the temperature is now smaller than that, the particles actually, and this is the era where actually m goes like t to the cube when we have this relativistic thing over there. But now if it's becoming slowly non-relativistic, what's happening is that the other era, non-relativistic era, is beginning, and that goes like exponential to m minus m over t. Okay, so what we expect in this era is an exponential decrease. Okay, so this is, if there was an equilibrium, then e goes like, well, the number of particles goes like e to minus m chi over t. Okay, so this would be the exponential decrease if you kept the equilibrium. But of course, the equilibrium is no longer true because at some point, actually, the reaction rate is not enough to keep the equilibrium. So at that point, actually, these particles decouple from equilibrium. And they don't go like that, but rather the number of the particles is conserved. In other words, n chi goes like t cubed again. So it must go to some constant value here. Okay, and so what really happens is this thing here. So you have constant n over t cube here, because you have relativistic equilibrium, and then you have constant n over t cube here, and this is called relic density. Because the number of particles is conserved after that. And of course, the region where this sort of, where your departure from equilibrium to what actually happens precisely corresponds to this freeze out. Out when gamma approximately equals to h. Okay? So this is what's happening. And so now you may be observing this relic density of the dark matter in the universe. let's say, so it decoupled from the other plasma long time ago, but now the number of chi particles is conserved, and so this is what we would observe now. Very good. So this was one example of freeze-out and decoupling. Another example studying different thing is that, well, let's consider that we have, you know, a bath of relativistic particles, but now these do not have to be necessarily in at the same temperature. You can have a bath of particles where, let's say, protons have one temperature and electrons have other temperature. If there are no longer reactions which would keep the temperature equal. So if they don't exchange any information, if one species is decoupled from the other species, then they can have completely different temperatures. So baths of relativistic particles, or relativistic species. So now if they are decoupled, if they are no longer in equilibrium, if there are no reactions which would keep them, you know, communicating with each other, then they can have can have different temperatures. Different temperatures. So now you associate, well, the most important temperature is temperature T, and you always associate it with the photons. Okay, so T is always the temperature of the photon gas. But then you can have other particles like electrons, neutrinos, or whatever, and so the other things, they can have Ti, which are different from T. Okay. So now you may be interested in what is the entropy of this configuration, or what is the energy density of this configuration. And it's given by the formulas which we derived. So let's say I take the entropy density, and it's given by this 2 pi square over 45. And then T cube. But of course, this would be true only if you have photons only. But you have to add all, you know, to entropy, all the species contribute. Right? So you have to sum over all possible contributions. Okay. And so how people do that is then they say, well, there's this factor G star of S. Okay. And so this G star of S exactly corresponds to the summing over all possible contributions. So it will be sum over the bosons, Ti. So now this goes like T cube, but they can have different temperatures. So it's Ti over T times cube. And then you have also fermions which contribute to that. Sum over the fermions. And you remember that the contribution to the entropy is by 7 over 8. There's a different factor. So there's 7 over 8, sum of the fermions, and Gi Ti over T cube. So this G star depends on the temperature. And it effectively counts how many degrees of freedom I have, right? So this Gi will again be the number of internal degrees of freedom for the particle, so e.g. spin states. So for an electron, you would have 2 here. Well, electron is not a boson, but something else you would have. Okay. So similarly, for if you want to calculate the energy density, then again, the formula which we had before, but you put this G star in front of that, and it's pi square over 30 e to the 4. And now this G star is different from this G star of S, because now the dependence is t to the 4 instead of t to the cube, right? So this g star is now sum over the bosons gi. These gi's are the same. Now ti over t to the 4 plus sum 7 over 8 fermions gi ti over t to the 4th. Okay, so basically you are just summing all the contributions you have, but people like to express everything in terms of the temperature of the photon gas. So that's why they write these formulas here, and then they write everything else like. So they hide everything else in this G star of S or G star. Of course, if all the things are at the same temperature, then G star of S equals to G star. But if they are not, of course, the dependence on the temperature is different. So you get different G star, S, and G star. Okay. Okay. I think, can I go 5 minutes more? So last thing I want to mention is about chemical potentials. So I don't, you know, we will not really be doing anything with the chemical potentials. And the only thing which is important for us that the chemical potential for photons is equal to zero. But just to give you a flavor what's happening, so a remark. Chemical potentials. And so you know that in QFT you can change number of particles, right? You can create particles, you can destroy particles, and so on. So because in QFT particles can be created or annihilated. Their number is not conserved. Okay. Unless there is some symmetry which actually protects that number, right? So for example, at certain processes, you want to preserve the baryonic number, or you want to preserve the charge, or something like that. So you know, this can change, number of particles can change, unless there is a conservation law. So now, number of photons and whatever, photons are always created, always annihilated. So their number is never conserved. And so now if you think about the derivation of the Boltzmann distribution, which we used again in the statistical mechanics course, then you know that you put an average number and then you put a Lagrange multiplier for everything which is like you are averaging over, which is not conserved. So if it is conserved, that quantity exactly, then you don't put that Lagrange multiplier because it's an exact conserved quantity. So that means, so if we change the number of particles, if you allow to change the number of particles and have only an average number, there is a chemical potential which would be the conjugate variable. If it's not conserved, well, if n is conserved, then mu is equal to zero. So for this reason, actually, mu of gamma is always equal to zero. Okay, so. And you can explain this from this statistical mechanics derivation, or you can just simply look at the first law, TdS minus PdV, and then you would have to add mu dN term, where mu is exactly the chemical potential. So let's forget about these terms, but for photons, it doesn't really cost any energy to create the particles or annihilate the particles. So simply change this dn. So that's why mu must be zero. Okay. 3 minutes, please. Okay. So now if you have equilibrium process, let's say I have particle A colliding with particle B, and this gives me C plus D, then as long as this is like really equilibrium, then there's lots of conservations of number of particles and so on. So what it implies is that mu A plus mu B equals to mu C plus mu D. So mu A plus mu B equals to mu C plus mu D from here. Because to destroy A, I create C and so on. Okay. If you have non-equilibrium, so let's say if this left-hand side is bigger or smaller, then the process goes one way. It doesn't go both ways. So you don't keep equilibrium. Okay. So in particular, if you, for example, consider annihilation to gamma, so gamma has mu equal to 0. So the right-hand side equals to 0. But it tells you that mu of electron is minus mu of positron. Okay, so from here, you have that mu of electron is minus mu of positron. Okay. So last thing I want to mention is that these mu's are not fixed. They depend generally on temperature, on you know, other things. So in general, mu's depend on temperature. And so as the temperature changes, the universe evolves in time, so they evolve in time. And so if you want to actually calculate something which involves these chemical potentials, then you need to take this into account. And then the number of independent chemical potentials actually precisely corresponds to number of conservation laws you have there. Number of conservation laws corresponds to number of independent potentials. And let me give you an example. So let's say that the lepton number is conserved. So then the delta in the particle density of particles and antiparticles of the species I plus the corresponding neutrinos and of mu I. So all these numbers go like t to the cube. The entropy and density goes like t to the cube. So this thing must be a constant in time. So this is a constant. And then you can take I to be electron, muon, or tau. Okay. And that will be, again, your homework for relativistic fermions, you'll find that delta of that fermion, which is number of n minus n bar, is proportional to t cube mu over t. Is this you will show in your homework. Okay. So what it means is that if I plug it here, so this goes like t cube mu over t, this goes like t cube. So from here, you know that mu of electron plus mu of the corresponding neutrino, and using that mu electron is minus mu positron over t equals the constant. So this gives you how the chemical potential of the electrons depends on the temperature t. Okay, and if you are interested, see Mukanov, and he discusses this on 20 pages. So, okay, see you tomorrow. Thank you.